The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to The Chalene Show. Chalene is a New York Times bestselling author, celebrity fitness trainer, and obsessed with helping you live your dream life.
Hey there. Welcome to this edition of The Chalene Show. Today, you're really in for a treat. You're going to love this interview because it's going to inspire you. I want to tell you about Michelle Salt, but if I do, I think the interview would be less interesting. So here's what I want you to know about her. Her story is going to inspire you to be better. Her story is one of being at your absolute worst and creating a vision and a plan to be your best. And when I say at your absolute worst, I mean she was at rock bottom. She was newly divorced and laying in a hospital bed, broken into pieces, and being told that her life would never be the same. Kind of interesting how I discovered Michelle. I was looking on Instagram one day and I was on, you know, the Discover page. I think that's what you call it now. And there was this, you know, image of this really confident woman standing on a stage, which looked like a fitness competition. So I clicked on it because I was inspired by her physique. And then I read her story. And that's where the real inspiration began. You are going to love this story. Michelle, thank you so much for being a guest today on The Chalene Show. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. One thing I know about you already is you don't give up.
No, I don't.
As with is always the problem with technology is it can be your best friend and it can be like such a nightmare. And we had like major obstacles trying to connect today, but neither of us gave up, did we?
No. And we're here right now chatting. So
that's right. Yeah. So let's start with that. You know, this is your personality. Like, I'm not giving up. I'm going to persevere. I'm going to keep trying. Has that always been your style?
No, not really. Yes, I was a tough kid and I wouldn't let my trials and tribulations hold me down. But I also played the victim card and often would blame everything else on everyone else.
Really?
Yeah. After my accident, that changed, though. I woke up and realized that I couldn't take my second chance for granted. And I think that created a fire in me that is still burning today.
Michelle, for those people who aren't familiar with your story, maybe haven't seen your TED Talk, can you tell us about what happened in June of 2011?
Sure. So it was just a normal day out riding my motorcycle with a couple friends. We were going up this...
Okay, let's stop right there. That in and of itself isn't normal. Like, that's super badass. I love that. So what kind of a bike did you have? Let's talk motorcycles for a second.
I had my first bike was actually a Honda CBR 600, which is a pretty big bike.
A little crotch rocket.
Yeah.
Right.
Big bike.
Okay. Yeah. Big bike for a small girl. And had you ridden motorcycles before? Was this something you regularly did?
I grew up riding dirt bikes, so I thought moving into a bike on the road made sense. And you know, with that, I went for a big bike right off the bat.
In June of 2011, how long had you been riding on the street?
Actually, not very long, maybe a couple months.
Okay. Please continue.
So we're going up a long hill that was quite windy. Speed limit was 80 kilometers an hour. I'm not sure what that is in miles, but we were going up and these guys opened up, you know, going quite fast, and being the tomboy that I am, wanting to keep up with the boys, I also opened up, got to about 120 kilometers an hour, hit my back brake because I was going into the corner too quick, which caused my bike to lay down, this 500 pound machine pinned on top of me. We slid across a lane and a half, and then I hit the guardrail head first.
Do you recall that? Do you recall the skidding? Or
no,
is this things that people have told you?
Yeah, this is only based on what witnesses have told me.
Wow.
And even then, no one really knows what happened because I've had flashbacks, but I don't know why I hit my back brake and only people saw parts of it. So Yeah, I hit the guardrail head first, did cartwheels in the air and hit the guardrail again. So upon impact, I had a brain injury. I had broken most of the bones in both my legs, including bilateral tib-fib fractures. I shattered my pelvis, my hips, L4, L5 vertebrae, right clavicle, punctured a lung, and bruised.
Holy cow. You fly through that list so fast. Can you say that? Give me that list again, because I really want to like take this in.
Yeah. So most of the bones in both my legs, my lower bones in my legs, my tibia, fibula, were compound. So they were sticking out.
Both compound fractures.
Well, just lower leg. So tib, fib are both lower. That was on both sides of my leg.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I remember my left knee, I don't really know the right leg because the right leg was in such bad shape that they amputated it anyway. But I had also broke my right femur in two places, and that had severed my femoral artery.
Okay. And which leg was it?
On the right leg.
On the right leg. Wow.
And almost completely severed off by the guardrail.
Who came to you first, you know?
So I was really lucky because the bystanders who had actually stopped, the first people on scene, were a couple coming down the hill, and the lady was an ER nurse who was now retired, but she knew because of that artery being severed that I was in critical shape. So she called STARS Air Ambulance, which is our helicopter air ambulance, and they were dispatched right away, which saved my life.
So it wasn't even an EMS worker. Well, it was somebody who was off duty who knew to call STARS.
Yes. Yeah.
Hello, God wink. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, everything.
When do you recall coming to?
About 4 days later.
Wow. So you had a head injury, and I don't know much about that. I've seen your TED Talks. I've caught some clips of times when you've been, you know, a speaker from the stage, but let's talk about your head injury. Did you have a closed head injury? Did you have swelling? Did they put you in an induced coma?
Yeah. So I was in an induced coma for those 4 days. My scans came back fine, which was quite confusing to me and my family, because when I was taken off life support, and even that time that even though I, you know, I couldn't communicate, when I was on the respirators and life support, I was always shutting one eye and I was very dizzy. And so about a year later, I found out that I had long-term brain bruising and that my memory, as well as my concentration and focus and a bit of hostility, was caused from hitting a guardrail head first going 120.
Yeah. You know, the brain and brain injuries are really fascinating to me. One thing we both have in common is, you know, I grew up much like you, a tomboy, wanted to do what the boys are doing, rode motocross, water skiing, all the rough and tumble sports. So I had multiple concussions as a child, and I've learned that so many people have had early childhood brain injury that they didn't realize, like a concussion or just a, you know, they didn't necessarily get knocked out, but they hit their head really hard, and it can really change your personality. Like it can really impact your irritability. And it's not uncommon what you've just described for it not just to be memory, but for it to change a person's personality.
For sure.
But you had a lot more going on than the brain injury and irritability. So you wake up in a hospital 4 days later, and take us back to that moment.
I was scared. I knew that I had been in an accident, but I wasn't aware that I needed 36 units of blood, or sorry, 28 units of blood, which is three times what my body holds, that my family had sat in a room for 36 hours waiting to hear if I was going to survive the five major surgeries I'd went through, and of course, the amputation of my leg, which at that point I didn't know. I didn't find out until I had come off life support, but it was a very terrifying moment. I remember wanting to breathe against the respirators.
Because what does that mean?
Well, it's not a natural feeling to have these machines breathing for you. And naturally you just want to fight it. You want to breathe on your own. But because I had punctured a lung, I wasn't able to do that. So I just remember feeling like I was choking. Yeah.
It's a nightmare. I'm feeling this. Like I feel like someone has their hands around my throat.
Yeah.
So you wake up and is there someone there to go, explain, okay, here's what's going on, and you need to just relax and let the machine breathe for you? Or you just wake up and you're like, okay, I'm dying. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I had been in and out of this induced coma. And so throughout that time, my family was talking to me. I don't remember the specific moment waking up, but I do remember my family all around me, everyone holding my hand. Those 7 days I was on life support, they did a great job of telling me that I was going to have this incredible life and I was going to do these big things, even though at that time I wasn't aware that I was an amputee or that I had all of this hardware put into my body to essentially piece me back together.
Did they amputate your leg? And is it an above knee or below knee amputation?
Oh, I'm quite high above the knee. Originally, I was told 2 inches because that's the norm, but I had severed about 10 inches above the knee. So that's where they amputated.
So if we're taking that from your pelvis, how much of your leg is remaining?
Oh, I don't have much. So I have a lot of skin from the trauma. I have about 6 inches of skin, but I'm 12 inches above the knee. So if you really,
I don't even have 12 inches above my knee, girl.
I know. I have very long legs.
Wow.
But there really isn't much. Like, I would say probably a hand length for me, if that, of femur still left.
Gosh. So you wake up, and I have been in car accidents myself, and I remember thinking like dumb things. Like, I was in a rollover car accident one time, and I remember thinking like, oh no, my purse, I'm going to have to get everything from my purse and find it and stick it in my purse, like really dumb things. Did you have any of those, like, just irrelevant thoughts?
Oh, I did. So right off the bat, my family, I was trying to speak and communicate, and I was doing like charades and they couldn't figure it out. So they came up with a brilliant idea to put a piece of paper on a clipboard and give me a pencil. They would move it as I would write.
Okay.
And I was writing job, boss. Like, I wanted my boss to know that I was okay and that I was coming back to work.
Wow. I'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah, right? And I also remember thinking, I don't want to get bed sores, so roll me over.
Wow.
Even though it had only been 4 days.
Wow. And at what point, and who was it that broke the news to you, or did you discover it on your own that you weren't the same person? A part of you had been amputated.
Right. So one of my doctors had come in and he was telling me the story about how his neighbor's missing 2 legs and he drives and he goes to university. And I remember thinking, why are you telling me this story? I guess my family had decided together that they weren't going to tell me until they thought I was ready. But in that moment, I had questions. And so my older sister was the only one in the room. And she came over and, you know, she said they tried everything they possibly could to save your leg, but they just couldn't. And so they had to amputate it above the knee.
I think for our listeners, they're probably wondering, wait, why would someone have to tell you that? Wouldn't you know? So can you explain to us why it is they would actually have to tell you that you were missing a limb?
Right. So some of the medication they give you causes amnesia. And so I hadn't really remembered that along with my brain bruising. You know, those 4 days were blurry. Within those 4 days, I think it was the first 36 hours, they had tried everything they could to save the leg. They took a main vein from the left leg, put it in the right leg. Unfortunately, the blood did not take. Mm-hmm. So after that first day and a half, my family was told that I would lose my leg. In my ICU journal, my mom did write that I was going into this life-changing surgery, and she had asked me if I was scared, and I had tears running down my face, and I nodded yes. I don't remember that. Mm. I just remember waking up 4 days later. That's it.
So it sounds to me like they didn't amputate when they first brought you in. They tried to save the leg. You probably went through multiple surgeries. And let's not forget, every other bone in your body was broken and you had a punctured lung. So there's all these other things. They've amputated the leg. You're on heavy pain medication for all of these injuries. And I've shared this a couple of times with my listeners, but my father also lost his leg in a motorcycle accident here in Southern California. And I remember when they amputated his leg, he had phantom pain. So he came out of surgery and he thought the leg was still there. because he could feel, like, he's like, I'm moving my toes. Did you have phantom pain or phantom feelings?
Yes. Oh, for the first year, it was awful. I hardly slept.
Tell me about that.
Well, because my foot was so damaged, that leg was quite beat up. My dad was a firefighter for 35 years, so he was brave enough to look at the leg, whereas everyone else didn't really want to see it before they amputated it. And he will to this day tell you that it looked like a puzzle that was put together wrong. So I had a lot of damage to the foot, and so I feel the foot quite a bit. And it's like when your foot falls asleep, that feeling times 10, almost like someone is taking a lighter up and down the bottom of your foot.
So there's nothing there. So like, and you have to help me understand this or help all of us understand this. So this pain that you're feeling, is it in the place where you think your foot would be? Or is it where the amputation has happened? Like, so hard to understand.
Right. So I had that leg for 26 years. When you talk to someone who was much younger, congenital, they won't have phantom pain. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, I had that leg for a very long time, like a huge portion of my life. Mm-hmm. So I've been told this is how phantom sensation or phantom pain works, is when a part of your body is injured, your brain sends signals down to that injured limb to help it heal. However, because those nerves are severed, it gets to that nerve and it's blocked. So it still, for whatever reason, sends signals down to that foot, but that foot is no longer there. So it comes back to those nerves and it just creates that pain.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long were you in the hospital?
5 months.
5 months?
5 months. Yeah. Living in the
That's
hospital.
That's so long.
It is. It is a very long time. I was in the ICU for 12 days. I was in the Foothills Trauma Center, which is a large hospital here in Calgary, Alberta, for a month. And then I moved to a rehabilitation center where I was there full time for 4 months. About 3 months, I started going home on weekends. But even then, it was too hard. I couldn't put any weight on my left leg, so I was fully in a wheelchair, no weight bearing. So I had a lot of people that, you know, were in my corner helping me, but it was difficult to, you know, be on my own.
Oh my gosh, this is crazy. Before the accident, tell me about your lifestyle. I know you're really into health and fitness, but what exactly changed, or what was life like before that you wanted to get back to?
Yeah, I think actually my life was quite similar. I've been in the gym since I was 13 years old, always very athletic, playing every sport I could in the small town of 1,500 people that I grew up in. And so that was really important to me, being active and being a part of sports. When I became a runner, I loved it, but my knees just couldn't take it. They kept dislocating. So I decided that I was going to transition from running to doing fitness competitions. And I was in the best shape of my life, you know, May 9th, 2011, when I did my fitness comp. But after that, I continued to maintain my health and it saved my life.
After the accident, at what point did you say, I'm going to go back to fitness? I'm going to do the things I was doing before. At what point did you make that decision?
So within hours of finding out about my leg.
That sounds amazing, but it also seems unbelievable, right? Like, it seems like, wait a second, you didn't have a pity party. Did you? You didn't like throw something at the wall and scream and think, well, now I'm just going to lay around.
Even though I hadn't remembered losing my leg, I think subconsciously I kind of knew. And my family was also sitting by my side and telling me I was going to do big things with my life. So yeah, of course I cried, and the first few weeks were hard. But it was almost like a part of me that I didn't know I had kicked in, and I was this strong, resilient person. I knew I needed a goal, and right away I was like, yep, this is it. I'm going to walk back on the stage the fitness stage with a prosthetic leg, and I'm going to become a Paralympian. Like, this is it. These are the two things. And everybody's like, hey, you're heavily medicated. We're going to come back to this. But no, I did not let up. And, you know, I kept talking about it. So they brought pictures of me snowboarding and pictures of me on the fitness stage. They printed them all out and they brought them to the hospital for me.
Let's stop right there, because that is so profound. You had a vision for where you would be. You are broken. Every part of you is healing. You've lost a major part of your body. You've lost ability. You've lost blood. You've lost so much. But you had a vision for where you could be. And I think what's so interesting is that not only did you share your vision and tell other people about your vision, which frankly, many people are afraid to do because they think, you're so far away from that. You know, how are you going to tell everyone you're going to be the president or that you're going to lose 100 pounds or that you're going to get up out of this bed and, you know, become an Olympian? You know, most people are afraid to make those kind of statements or visions or proclamations for their future. But you did that. That to me is really powerful. And the second thing that I think is really interesting and I want everyone to take away from this is that you spoke your vision and you brought pictures. Like you actually brought pictures or your family brought pictures to you to help you to see where it was you wanted to go.
Right.
And how, I mean, for so many of us, and I'm sure you of all people are so annoyed when you hear people say things like, well, I haven't worked out in 6 months because my knee's been acting up. Do you want to just punch them?
Sometimes, yeah. But
give us some tough love.
I used to be that person before. But the truth is we can find ways around a hurt knee or a back that's bugging you. Like I do a lot of my workouts with one leg. I've figured it out. My L4, L5 are fused. You know, I don't have the same movement, but I've adapted. So I truly believe that we can all adapt. There is a way to do it. And maybe we're not doing the same things as before, or we're limited to what we can do for the time being. But it doesn't mean you have to stop going to the gym or stop being active.
What is it? Like, how do you help someone have belief in themselves?
Well, I think a lot of it stems from not just your support system, which is very important, but also just knowing your abilities. For me, losing a leg meant that I now had the opportunity to do all the things I was doing before, plus more, and do it with so much more pride than I was doing it beforehand. And so that pride was what pushed me every day. It was like, I want to feel those butterflies. I want to really acknowledge that moment when I try something for the first time. And I'm like, yes, I did that as an amputee.
Talk to me about days where you weren't Michelle Salt, the strong, you know, courageous, brave TED Talk speaker, where you did have a pity party. And how did you get yourself out of that cycle?
Oh, I still have those pity parties once in a while. And I think that that's normal, but we need to find a way to come out of that. I always ask myself, okay, well, why am I doing this? You know, and I go back to that day 8 in the hospital when I looked up and I said, yeah, I want to become a Paralympian. This is what I want to do. I want to get back to the fitness stage. And so I think back to that often and that drive and that determination. And I had to start, and it did not come easy. Like I had to start back from the basics, learning to shower by myself. I couldn't walk. You know, I didn't have concentration, little things like that. I couldn't even sit up on my own. And I still struggle with that.
Wow.
So even though I had this big vision and goal, I had these moments where it was so hard being an amputee and I just wanted to give up. And I'm like, no, I made a promise to myself. I've already told everybody, which means I have to hold myself accountable or no one's ever, like, I'm not going to be the boy who cried wolf.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to do this. Wow. I have publicly said I'm going to do this and I need to do it.
Wow. I think the average person doesn't realize how challenging it is. I mean, people think, okay, you lost a leg and now you've got a prosthetic. So yeah, you might walk with a limp, but what's the big deal, right? Like you just learn how to do things with this prosthetic. But knowing what I do because of my dad's situation and because I'm a snowboarder, I cannot even imagine how hard it was to get up on a board, especially where your amputation was, like so high like that. Like you're snowboarding on one leg, basically.
Yeah, Yeah, so technology has actually come a long way. I have this cool sports knee with a Fox mountain bike shock in it. And even though, you know, the technology is there, I didn't know how to use it. I had no idea. So for the longest time, I did not bend my knee in toe turns. And, you know, I was taking out volunteers and fencing on the border cross course. So it was really scary forever. Even when I went to Sochi and competed in my first Paralympic Games, I still didn't know what I was doing. But I had a great coach, and I just had that drive to figure it out. And the next season after Sochi, after figuring my knee out, I was able to be on every World Cup podium. So it's the time and it's the effort. You just got to keep going. If it's something doesn't work, you got to fix it. And that's what we're constantly doing, tinkering with my leg and let's try this and let's try that. And eventually it works.
Is it painful, like, to wear the prosthetic? And
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, because I have a lot of nerve damage, mine wasn't just, you know, often when amputees have cancer, their leg is cleanly amputated, whereas mine was not. I had a lot of trauma and damage to the muscles and the nerves. So I have, you know, scar tissue built up, and it can be quite painful. Often when I'm home, I take my leg off, and it's been seven years and I'm still not quite used to it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I just don't think people realize that. You know, they see people just moving forward and see your social media images and probably don't realize, like, it's a daily battle. And it's incredible that you were snowboarding just 3 years later as a Paralympian representing Canada in snowboarding. Were you able to fulfill your vision of returning to the stage for fitness?
I did. 6 months after Sochi, I walked the stage again, and it was incredible. You know, it's cool. And I tell
people, a fitness competition for people with special needs?
No. I competed against 21 able-bodied girls. I finished ninth.
Oh my gosh, that's insane. That is insane.
It is. And you know what's incredible is the first time I did it, I finished fourth. So in the top five, which was, you know, motivation to go and get my pro card.
Was that before the accident, you mean?
Yeah, before the accident, a month and a half before the accident. And I did it very self-conscious, not loving the way I looked. You know, I didn't smile as much as I should have on the stage. I was still a very lost person inside. The second time I did it, covered in scars, missing a leg, I did it loving myself fully and totally content how I looked.
Wow.
Do you look at the comparison pictures that I have on my Instagram of me before and me after? And I have this massive smile on my face. I look like a totally different person. Well, of course, you know, now I'm covered in scars and missing a leg, but I did it for me. I didn't do it for anybody else. I did it for me.
Ah, oh, so huge. And we will link to that Instagram post in the show notes. So while you're looking at your phone, if you just swipe over the artwork for the podcast, or if you're listening to this on a tablet or other device, if you do so, you'll see the show notes, and there we'll have a link to Michelle's Instagram image, the one that she's referring to. But why? What made the difference? You said, I was doing it for myself. And I'm just going to tell you, frankly, I'm not a fan of fitness competitions because I just don't love the idea of people standing on stage and being judged. Yes. Yeah. And like, you're in the best shape of your life and you came in last place. Like, what does that feel like? Right. So, but it sounds to me like you did it the next time, not for judgment or an award, but to prove to yourself that you weren't going to be limited.
For sure. And I think that was exactly it. Like, I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it again. And I don't know if I'll ever do a fitness competition, you know, going forward again, if that's in my future or not, because I don't think that I need to do that in order to feel accepted or feel like I've accomplished anything, because I know I have. But for me, I just wanted to walk the stage again. Yeah. And it was incredible. Everybody was up on their feet. Like, you could see all my competitors behind me in tears, clapping. I don't know. I think that's what I did it for. It's just like, I'm doing this. I'm proud of how I look. I'm rocking my medal and, you know, my prosthetic leg. And here I am. Take me as I am. And so it was a defining moment for me. It really helped prove, going from being a fitness model to all of a sudden waking up being covered in staples and scars and missing a leg, was the hardest thing I had to deal with and get over after my accident was how I looked and how society was going to view me. And then one day I just decided, I don't care. This is me. I'm not going to stop being healthy and active and being in shape. I can still be in great shape. Even though my body's different, I can still do that. I can still be healthy.
Wow. Michelle, what's next for you? You're obviously someone with big dreams and visions and fearless.
Yeah.
So what's next?
I'm working right now on getting into the best shape of my life again, better than before, for my 34th birthday. You know, I just want to feel a little healthier than I feel now. And I'm like 34. 34 is going to be my age for me. I just want to try a bunch of new sports I've never tried before. I'm pushing to get adaptive wake surfing as now a competitive sport. And so I'm taking some time off. Two Paralympic Games have been enough for me at the time being. And I'm just going to work on, you know, speaking and making sure I have fun every day.
Oh, that's so inspirational. Do you still ride motorcycles?
I ride dirt bikes. Yep.
Would you ride on the road again?
I have. I bought a little Ninja 250 a year after. It just wasn't worth the risk, but I like dirt bikes, more controlled environment.
But that's still, I mean, you are a thrill seeker, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, you love adrenaline.
I do.
How have the people around you, the ones who are holding your hand, the ones who are there by your side during this tragedy, how have they coped with the fact that, you know, you still want to take risks? You still like the adrenaline. You still want to do these things.
They don't really have a choice.
Have they asked though? Like, you know, I don't want you to do this or no?
No, I haven't really. Like my little sister took it hard. So she's voiced concerns. When I got that motorcycle, I sold it. I rode it one day and I sold it because I saw what it did to them. And I just don't want to put my family through that again. So, but they've come to accept that I'm just going to do it. That's who I am. I love adrenaline. And I will say now that I'm not as reckless. I definitely make sure I have my skill set there. And I put a lot of hard work and effort into the sports that I play to ensure that I'm not doing anything completely out of my skill set or my ability.
Michelle, final words to the person who is listening to this, who feels like they're at their lowest for whatever reason, physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, spiritually. They're at their lowest.
Yeah.
What words do you have for them?
So one of my favorite quotes, or that this is actually my motto, that when you feel your worst and you try your hardest, that's when you gain the most. So just remember, you're not alone. You know, we have each other, and there is so much fulfillment and gratitude that comes out of pushing forward when you're at your absolute lowest. And someday you're going to look back and you're going to say, wow, I came out of that horrible, dark time in my life. And here I am now, happy and fulfilled. And so I think that we just got to keep pushing. Don't give up. See the beauty in tragedy.
Yeah. Michelle, your words have so much hope and just, it's motivating. It's inspirational. I know you hear that, but it truly is to hear someone like you and the attitude that you've adopted. And frankly, what I love most about your story is that you admittedly say, I wasn't this person before. I was a person who blamed everybody else. I had a bad attitude. And the gift of this tragedy was this unbelievable drive and how inspirational it can be to other people. Michelle, where can people who want to connect with you, where can they learn more and reach out?
So I'm pretty active on my Instagram, which is Para Shredder, or just look up Michelle Salt, as well as my website, michellessalt.com.
And that's Michelle with two L's, Michelle S as in Sam, salt.com. Michelle, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and being a guest on The Chalene Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This edition of The Chalene Show was brought to you by 131 Movement. Stop dieting. Save your brain, save your gut, live longer, feel better. Stop going on a diet or following somebody else's rules and figure out what it means to have your own diet. Figure out a method that actually serves you, that helps you to be a better version of yourself. Let go of all of this craziness and confusion that surrounds diet and understand the science of one, the study of one. Join the 131 movement today. We're taking back the word diet and getting what we are rightfully entitled to, which is our health. You deserve not just to look amazing, but to feel amazing. I'd love for you to learn more about my personal journey and why this is a true passion for me. I invite you to learn more by going to 131movement.com.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.